8:30 a.m. KSDP, I'm Kels Hetherington, and this is Meet the People for March the 8th, 2010. My guest this morning is Dr. Jane Orient. She is Executive Director of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. She has practiced medicine since 1981 and is a clinical lecturer in medicine at the University of Arizona College of Medicine. Dr. Orient joins us on the phone this morning to discuss the Obama healthcare plan and what, if passed, it may mean for people like you. Well, with that introduction, good morning to you, Dr. Orient, and thank you for coming on the air.
Well, good morning.
I know a lot of people in the medical industry, doctors in particular, are concerned about Obamacare. What in particular are they concerned about?
Well, if you want the one-sentence summary, it's going to increase costs, it's going to decrease the availability of care, and it's going to decrease your choices and the quality of your care.
Mm.
That should concern every American.
I think a lot of people are not fully aware that some aspects of healthcare reform have already been passed into law. Last year, a requirement for an electronic registry was passed into law as part of one of the stimulus bills. What will that mean for healthcare in the United States after 2014?
It means that the patients lose the ownership of their medical data and their medical records in 2014. They will have to have, at least if the doctor's to get insurance payment for his services, they will have to have their data entered into an interoperable program so that the information becomes widely available to government agencies, to health plans, to other government agencies that are not specifically related to health, potentially to employers, blackmailers, marketing companies, very widely available. And I think one of the main purposes of it is going to be is to decide whether you are eligible for certain types of medical care, or whether you go way down on the priority list because of your lousy overall health status, because you smoke, because you're too old, because you're too young, because you're in the wrong ethnic group so that treating you doesn't help to decrease our gaps and disparities, for all types of reasons that are not related to your best interest.
Now, on the surface, an electronic medical depository that doctors and medical providers all have to use come 2014 sounds like a good idea because it would allow patients to have access to their medical records and, in effect, be able to go from one doctor to the next saying, all right, here's the report I got from one doctor. Here's the procedure he thinks that I need based on these findings. What do you think? Can you give me a second or third opinion? And by the way, what would you charge for this procedure? Isn't that a good thing, doctor?
Yes, and the way to accomplish that these days is to use the telephone, the fax machine, the computers that we already have that can put all of this stuff on a flash drive that you can take to the doctor if you want. All of these things will become actually more difficult with this interoperable health systems because they don't do a terrific job of communicating with each other. They put in little tiny boxes all of the stuff that's supposed to be on there so that trying to find what you need, trying to decipher what it means, trying to put it in the very limited set of vocabulary that would be allowed may take up most of the doctor's time that he would otherwise spend talking to you and asking you questions.
So what you're saying is it may not be an act of simply scanning in medical records that a doctor already has, which would be time-consuming, but might require them to refill out these medical records. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the interoperable database, yes. Just putting in a scan, that does not serve the purpose that they have in mind, which is to be able to determine eligibility at the time of service. Yeah, a lot of doctors have scans, and they can do that now. Doctors don't need a $50,000 medical record system to be able to conveniently transmit this information.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's going to impede the transfer of information if you listen to physicians who already have experience with these systems.
Yes, a few organizations, large medical providers, including one major one in New York, have already tried out these systems and abandoned them after finding that it was so time-consuming and full of errors that they could not continue with it. But it does seem on the surface like a good idea. Something needs to be done about healthcare. Would you agree?
Absolutely, I do. But first, you ought to make the right diagnosis, and instead of just doing more of the same that we already have.
Let me go back and ask you about the organization for which you are the executive director, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. What is that organization actually for? What do you advocate for? Because this is an advocacy organization, am I correct?
It is, and it was founded in 1943, and we are the voice for independence of both patients and physicians. We think it really is not a good idea to become dependent upon a bankrupt, either for your medical care or for your livelihood, and that's what so-called healthcare reform is going to force you to do. It's going to force you to buy a very overpriced insurance plan, whether you want it or not. It's going to drive out of the marketplace some innovative or less costly insurance plans, make it much more more difficult for you to pay directly for services, and in general, micromanage the practice of medicine.
Which leads me to my next question. If you are able to pay for medical services and drugs, prescription drugs, independently of your insurance, after Obama Healthcare is enacted, will you still be able to get those procedures and prescription drugs so long as you are able to independently pay for them?
You might or might not, depending upon their availability. But one thing you have to remember is that this sounds like this is a very, very expensive thing that nobody can afford to pay for medical care. Therefore, it all has to go through insurance. But what happens when you put everything through a third-party payer system is the costs skyrocket, which is exactly what happened when everybody became dependent on a so-called insurance plan for 85% of medical expenditures. Things that used to cost a few days' wages for a construction laborer, like my appendectomy when I was in high school, now cost thousands of dollars. And they still do the appendectomy the same way that they used to.
Why does it cost so much more?
Well, in the first place, we have all of this overhead for processing a claim. It's much easier just to give the doctor a check for the amount due. And the other thing is that there are all perverse incentives built into the system to overconsume certain services for which the insurance company is willing to pay. Plus, there's a huge amount of cost shifting from government plans like Medicare and Medicaid, which do not pay the full cost of treating patients that are insured by them.
Yeah, a lot of doctors, in fact, will not see people who are on, I guess, Medicare and Medicaid alone. They will require additional payments. And you say in your op-ed, which I got by email, that about 45% of doctors would simply walk away from the medical business if Obamacare is passed into law. That was a finding of Investor's Business Daily. Why would so many doctors walk away from practices that they've worked years to be able to be involved in?
Well, I would suggest that every American would walk away from a business that he constantly had to subsidize. People are not willing or able to pay in order to work. Doctors have huge and increasing overheads just to run their practice, and the government and insurance plans have clamped down on the fees that they can charge. So a lot of patients who walk through the door are money losers. And, you know, doctors like to be charitable and they enjoy healing people and so on, but they've got to have money to pay the rent.
Now, have the fees that you get for services, you are an independent practitioner, I believe, and you're just a general internist, am I correct?
Correct.
Have you seen a decline in revenue from your own practice over the last 20 years?
Well, I'm not really a good example for that because my practice is very small. I can tell you that most doctors that I know have that experience that revenue goes down and expenses go up, so their take-home pay is going down sometime dramatically, except those who have had the nerve to take the leap and opt out of all these third-party arrangements, they find that they can decrease their overhead drastically so that they can cut the fees for their services to a point that most people find quite reasonable and affordable, and yet they're taking home even more money.
It's interesting you say that.
And they're working less.
It's interesting you say that because my own doctor in Anchorage said to me recently, he said, if I didn't have to go through insurance, I could accept less from you. I thought that was a very interesting comment. How much less could you bill a patient directly if you didn't have to go through insurance?
Well, there is an ambulatory surgery facility in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, whose fees for patients who pay upfront in cash before the service are 20% of what the hospital's prevailing charge is. That is 20%, not a 20% discount, but 20% of. That's 80% less than the going rate, simply because they have a very small business department, because they do get paid and they're not cost-shifting for Medicare and Medicaid. And people love to work there. Patients always want to come back to have more procedures done there. It works very efficiently. It's a beautiful facility. This is what we could do if we weren't carrying around a huge load of unnecessary costs.
Now, I think that's a great idea, kind of getting away from the insurance model when it comes to healthcare providers and doctors. How would we do that? And what would people do about catastrophic medical needs that might be very, very expensive? How would you pay for those in a world where we did not have insurance for medical stuff like we do today?
Well, I'm not talking about doing away with insurance. Insurance is supposed to be for catastrophes, like your house burning down or your car crashing. Most people have that kind of insurance. They find it very affordable. They hope they never have to file a claim. They hope the only thing they have to do with their insurance company is to pay their reasonable premiums. That's the way medical insurance used to be, that most services were paid for out of pocket at the time of services, out of service. They were much less expensive. It was clear that the doctor was working for the patient and not for some third-party bureaucrat. There was none of this army of clerks in the front. There were none of these forms to be processed. It was really a much better way to practice medicine, as well as a much more economical way.
Mm. Now, you are actively involved in the University of Arizona College of Medicine. What do your students think about the possibility of a radical reform of healthcare in America?
I don't have very many students there. I'm in the clinical faculty. I teach mainly through the written word, such as my physical diagnosis text. But the students I have had contact with are really forgotten that there is any other model than going to work for a managed care plan, becoming a wage slave, having to churn patients every 5 to 10 minutes and you know, focus on the coding and following the rules and so on. And they're really quite astonished to hear from someone say, you don't have to do that. Most of them are too young ever to have seen Marcus Welby on television. That medical model is dead in most of the country, but it doesn't need to be.
Tell us about that model. I'm not familiar with that either.
Well, Marcus Welby was the compassionate family doctor that you called when you were sick or injured, and he would come and he would take care of you. He had delivered you when you were a baby. He took care of you when you were a youngster. He took care of you in old age. Everybody knew him and loved him. He knew all of his patients by name. And he did what was best for them without consulting the formulary or the third party's protocols.
Hmm. If you're just joining us here on 8:30 a.m. KSDP, I'm talking with Dr. Jane Orient, and we're talking about Obamacare and the possibilities it will have of changing the kind of care we get in America when it comes to health care. Now, the Democrats have had a variety of, their ideas continue to cost more and more money. When they talk about them, they have got nothing passed, but they continue to push for something to go through Congress when it comes to health care. How are they going to pay for this huge liability? You write about that in your op-ed.
A really, really good question, and I think Paul Ryan was trying to push the president into talking about that at this recent summit. We already have huge liabilities for Medicare and Medicaid that absolutely positively cannot be paid. The government is going to have to default on its promises because they're just so huge. Some estimate the unfunded promises of Medicare and Social Security combined to be about $100 trillion. I mean, there's not enough money in the world to pay for that. Most states are already going bankrupt because of Medicaid. You can't help that by loading 10 to 15 million more beneficiaries into that program. Something has got to give. And I think what's going to happen is that there will be severe rationing of care, making it unavailable, consigning people to earlier death.
One accusation that's come from the Republican side of the aisle is that Democrats are going to pay for this by starting to tax for the programs they're going to be implementing in a couple of years right now, and that will at least give a little bit of a budgetary buffer for when they start out, and then
right.
Things will kind of degrade from there. Is that your understanding, too?
Oh, yes. The taxes start before the promised benefits, but, of course, the entitlement benefits always go up far more rapidly than anyone estimates, and they can say, okay, well, Social Security's been bankrupt a couple times, and all we did was tweak a little bit, raise the taxes a little bit, raise the level of income on which you have to pay them. But this time is different. This time the demographics are different. This time they really are out of money. And what they're going to do when the Middle Eastern countries like Saudi Arabia stop accepting dollars for oil, or when the Chinese stop lending us money, that's a question that's not pleasant to think about.
Mm. Well, they'll have to cut back on services, and they're already talking about making cuts, I think, to Medicaid in order to pay for this.
Yes, they're thinking about cutting the payments to hospitals and physicians, thinking that those hospitals and physicians are still going to be there when they can't pay their bills.
Well, how do they must have a rationale that they're following. How do they logically think that such a thing will work? How can they, cut fees and still have people ready to respond to a medical emergency?
Well, it's worked so far, hasn't it? We're getting to see it fraying around the edges, and it's getting harder and harder to get all the specialties covered in the emergency room. Lots of hospitals and emergency rooms have already closed. The shortage of obstetricians willing to deliver babies is approaching a really critical level. But I think they're in just a state of intense denial. The thing could come crashing down very rapidly. We're sort of borderline compensated right now. It isn't going to take much to cause a really sudden and dramatic change in medical services we're used to.
Now, you say that doctors will walk away from their practices or, go into different fields of medicine if you have massive health care reform in the United States, but history would indicate something rather different. History would indicate, at least in recent years, the last 20, that medical doctors will continue to practice their professions in much the same way as they have, because, as you've just pointed out, as the rate of compensation has declined, doctors have maintained their practices. Why is that going to change in the next 5 years?
Well, things really have changed quite dramatically. The doctors are churning patients. It's like, might as well have a sign in the office, one complaint per customer. They're having the patients come back and back and back for things that should all be happening in one visit. Doctors are dropping certain procedures that they used to do or they're unavailable to Medicare patients. Many physicians have already gone into profitable sidelines like Botox injections that are not covered by insurance that patients are willing to pay for out of pocket. Waiting lists to get into physicians' offices are lengthening. And these changes have happened rather gradually, so patients really aren't completely aware of them.
Mm. Now, we talked in the beginning about some of the concerns that you have and others in your profession have about this depository for old medical records that will become effective in 2014. And you suspect, and others suspect, that this will be a way for the government to at least begin to review doctors' decisions on what to prescribe and what medical procedures to recommend to their patients. How is the government going to exercise that new authority? Are they going to give doctors a call who are over-prescribing this procedure or that procedure, or are they going to need to actually pre-approve, like an insurance company might today, depending upon your plan, a procedure before a patient goes through that procedure?
Well, if you look at pages 57 to 59, I think it's the Senate bill. There's wording in there that really should chill your bone marrow. It talks about you will go to a facility with a card that will enable the facility to tell at the point of service or before whether you are eligible for a particular service, a particular treatment at a particular facility from a particular provider. And if you're not eligible, that means you're ineligible, and that means, like in Canada, you'll be turned away or that you will not get that procedure.
Mm. No, what
they will have.
Sorry.
There's a plan to have. It used to be 111. Now I think it's up to maybe 156 new bureaucracies set up in the Department of Health and Human Services to make decisions like this as to what constitutes quality care, what sort of measurements have to be reported, how doctors are to be rewarded or punished for not following directions.
Mm. And what are the possible punishments for doctors who are not following the government's directions?
Well, if you don't report on your quality metrics or you're not providing quality care, then they will be cutting your pay. But it's worse than that, actually, because even now they're deploying these squads of bounty hunters that come to physicians' office and audit all their medical records. And if you have committed waste, fraud, or abuse, which can mean a billing error, make you putting in the wrong code, or it can mean providing a medically unnecessary service, you can be slapped with a penalty of $50,000 per instance, or you can actually be prosecuted for a crime and sent away to prison, lose your medical license, lose your ability to participate in Medicare or Medicaid for 5 or 10 years, which means essentially forever, and you would not even be able to get a job as an orderly in any facility that takes Medicare money.
Mm. Well, Dr. Orion, tell me an example of where doing such a type of thing might be medically necessary in treating a patient. Where would it be necessary to do something that would be outside of the government regulations?
Well, what if the patient is elderly and is in such pain that he can't get out of bed, but he would be able even to go to work if he had a hip replacement? What if he could benefit from heart surgery, but he's got to wait in line behind so many other people that he'll be dead before his turn comes up? What if he needs a newer drug? The generic or older drugs just don't work for him, or they have unacceptable side effects in him? What if he needs a few more extra visits from his physician? All of these things might become unavailable.
Mm. It is a scary, scary prospect that we have and we're facing with Obamacare. Now, you would agree that something has to be done because they say that 30 to 40 million Americans are uninsured, and that's the Democrats saying that. The Republicans say that number includes a lot of people who either choose not to be insured or are here in the United States illegally or have for some reason opted out of health care by choice for some other reason. Let's say there are 12 million Americans who are involuntarily uninsured. How would you propose going about rectifying that situation?
Well, in the first place, I wonder why everybody thinks that insurance is the holy grail, that if we just got everybody insured, everything would be good. Everybody is insured in Canada, or almost everybody who's not living under a bridge and is not an illegal alien is insured, but many of them cannot get medical care, or they can't get it in a timely manner. Almost everybody in the United States has access to medical care as opposed to insurance. He might get stuck with a big bill afterwards if he didn't think to protect his assets, or the taxpayers might get stuck with a bill. But ordinarily, Americans do get medical care. The insurance is not the only way to pay for medical care. It's only the most expensive way. It's not necessarily even the best way.
So you would favor some sort of solution that was an alternative to universal coverage for every person in the nation?
Right. I think that we should reform the tax code so that we don't discriminate against people who own their own insurance policy, which creates job lock, and that means that there's more and more pressure for employers to offer very rich benefits that result in overutilization and driving the cost through the roof. I think that people need to take better advantage of the high-risk pools that already exist in a lot of states, and we need to restore the patient-physician relationship, restore insurance to its true role of just reimbursing the subscriber if he has a catastrophe, and put the money back in the hands of patients who will spend it prudently at their discretion when they see a doctor, who will then be working for them and not for some unseen bureaucrat.
Very interesting. And, Doctor, one final question in the last few moments we have. As you follow the events transpiring right now on Capitol Hill, what is your prediction? Will some sort of health care reform be enacted, or will this be a non-issue at the end of the year?
Well, I don't think it's going to become a non-issue. I fear that something will be enacted, perhaps a so-called compromise that still acts on the very flawed assumptions, namely that people should be forced to buy insurance, that the government should dictate what insurance is, and that will not be insurance truly, but it will be some sort of health plan that is upside down and backwards. It pays for routine expenses instead of for things that insurance is really needed to cover.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Jane Orient, for joining me on the radio this morning for Meet the People. Is there anything else that you want to add that perhaps I did not ask you about during the course of this interview?
Please go to www.aapsonline.org or to takebackmedicine.com. And we've looked at so far 33 myths about the health insurance debate and provided some analysis and a lot of other things that you can do. You can also submit your comments and your questions. So go to takebackmedicine.com or aapsonline.org.
All right. Oh, one final. This is the final question for me anyway. Last week when I was talking to a colleague of yours, he recommended that folks contact their elected representatives in Congress. Do you also feel that that is effective?
I think that we need to do that, and if you want to go to Take Back Medicine and give us your email address, we'll be happy to send you our action alerts that will tell you what's coming up and how to go about contacting your congressman if you want to sound off.
Well, thank you very much. It's Dr. Jane Orient on Meet the People. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. Dr. Jane Orient joined me on the phone from Arizona, where she is with the University of Arizona College of Medicine. She's been in practice since 1981, and she is the executive director of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. I'm Kels Hetherington, and that is Meet the People for March the 8th, 2010. We now go back to music, and then at the top of the hour, we will get live news from NPR in Washington, D.C.